Hi, everyone. For those of you who don't know me, I am the Chief Program Officer at the network, Lisa Smith. And it's good to see all your faces here. I know this has been a really hard time for all of us, personally, professionally, communally, and just knowing that we're all here together makes me feel better and supported. And I hope we gain strength from each other. So if you can rename yourselves, that'd be great. Right click in your name, rename your first name and your city. That would be wonderful. If you can mute yourselves until you talk, we want to hear from everyone. Believe me, we want to hear from everyone. So don't think that we are asking you not to talk. We just don't want a lot of sounds because we have 57 people who I think are going to be on this call. And that's really it for me and my whatever they're called, housekeeping rules. I want to thank Victoria, wherever you are, Victoria Pivnik from LA, wave right there, and Laura Gilman from Kansas City, our fabulous co-chairs. They really think about this a lot. And if you have any thoughts about what you want to talk about moving forward, just let us know. I'm going to hand it over to Victoria, and she's going to start us.
Hi, everybody. It's good to have all of you over here. I'm very excited to hear if you guys have any insights on what's going on. If you have best practices, this is the perfect place to share them. And I want to introduce Julie Chapnick, who needs no introduction. And she's going to talk about the kind of shifts Claims Conference is responding to due to COVID-19. So, Julie, take it away.
Hi, everyone. In case you don't know me, I'm Julie Chapnick from the Claims Conference. Victoria, I've never seen you before. How are you? It's nice to see you. I hope everyone is doing well and your families are safe and healthy. All of our staff has been working with most of you in the field. Everything we're hearing is just so inspiring. The social workers and the home care workers and the delivery, the transportation delivery for food has just been remarkable. And we're just so inspired and in awe of everyone in the field working tirelessly. We obviously are on this call for survivors, but on behalf of all of your vulnerable populations, it's just been inspiring for all of us at the Claims Conference. And we have been collecting questions and comments and narratives from, you know, just about 300 agencies and, 45 countries. So it has been a lot. And because of what we've been hearing, we have gone to the German government, which is our biggest funder. I know it's not our exclusive funder, but they are the biggest funder. Most of our programs and most of your programs to allow some flexibility. And we've been sharing that information as it becomes available. So if we haven't answered one of your questions yet, it's probably because we don't have one yet, but it's not because we're ignoring it. We just want to make sure we're giving you correct and accurate information and as timely as possible. So we've been trying to send out sort of these formal weekly, although we were a little late, so we sent one out Monday, or maybe you got it yesterday, as we've been able to make some flexibility with the grants. So you should have received, it looks like it says Claims Conference notification dated March 31st. You should have received it already. There was also one on March 20th. I tend to talk fast, so I apologize. In the latest from this week, we've negotiated quite a few areas of flexibility from through June 30th with the German government for a lot of the requirements of the program, including the eligibility documents. I mean, did everyone get it who is a Claims Conference grantee? If you just not, okay, great. So if you have any questions about it, if it's not clear, I don't want to read through the whole thing. It's three pages, but certainly be in touch with your program officer and we'll try to respond as quickly as possible. But there's been some flexibility with the eligibility documents, with the confirmation of services, and how we went to get this flexibility is basically based on everything we received from the agencies in the field. about whether they can get signatures or people, the mail not working in certain places and other things. So compiling all the information from the agencies into basic themes or areas was how it was presented. It was the eligibility documents, the confirmation of services, and really remarkable is this budgetary flexibility of the 20%. So we were excited to announce it. We are just working out the details of how that will work in Diamond because it will still be within our Diamond reporting system. So once we've sort of worked out the process a little bit more, we will share the exact details. We don't want you to start working on something and then have to change it because it's not working out how we thought in Diamond. But essentially, 20% of your German government grants, which is most of the agency's funding, can be used for more flexible purposes. Essentially, it's if you need more food than your cap allows. Those of you who don't have these grants, there's certain caps per services based on the German government rules. And so it's basically allowing flexibility within the caps. If you need more food during this time, if you need more assistance for really the transportation to get deliveries out, things that you wouldn't even, if you need software, because now you're setting up all your social workers at home, that kind of flexibility is within the 20%. And we'll give more information about how that will actually work, hopefully next week. But in the meantime, what we're hearing or what I'm getting from our staff, and which is coming from you, is basically you're not quite sure where the needs will be because we also very excitingly launched, and many of you have already applied, for an urgent relief fund. So we started, urgent relief fund of $2 million worldwide to start. And we're hoping to get partners with that $2 million in addition. And it has been, we've received, I think, 30-something applications at this point worldwide. And we hope to get approvals out as early as tomorrow with letters next week. I don't want to overpromise, but we are reviewing them very quickly and trying to get approval very quickly. And from what I'm hearing from the staff, because of the two options now with the 20% and this relief fund, and in addition, you're going to start getting your regular emergency assistance letters. You're not quite sure where everything should go yet. That's okay. We're working on this day to day, just as you are. And the staff, our program officers, are happy to work through that with you. But we have all of these exciting things to try and accommodate you in the field. So it's the flexibility with the documents, with the confirmation of services, the 20% on your budget, the urgent relief fund, and separately, you should be getting your regularly approved emergency assistance letters. Some of you may have already gotten it, but hopefully next week, and if not, right after Passover. So we have a lot going on. We also have received quite a few questions, which is not my purview, but I anticipated it, about compensation. So I wanted to give you something I was able to find out, which might be helpful. And that is that the annual life certificate process, which usually is around this time, has been pushed off for about 8 weeks. And then they'll reassess if it's safe to resume at that time. But the payments for Article 2 and CEF, which doesn't apply to this group, pensions will continue uninterrupted. We tried to get confirmation on the BEG pensions and their life certificate process, but that isn't through us. But what we were able to learn is that what I was able to learn and I'm sharing with you is that the BG pensions are administered through about 11 different landers or different states within Germany. So they're all operating a little differently. Some had already started the life certificate process. So I know some, I actually got a question from an agency already saying they were confused because the survivor had called them about their life certificate. I assume it's BEG because it's not Article 2. And that the ones that hadn't started are probably going to delay it. but we don't have a lot of information about that yet, only that we're trying to get information and working with the BEG pension authorities to clarify their individual procedures. So we don't have that information yet, but we're trying to get it. We also got a question if we are going to let survivors know that the life certificate, again, those who don't know, life certificates are for a compensation pension program that the Claims Conference administers Article 2. So we were asked if we were going to post about it. So we are not sending out a mailing, but it will be on our website. We will be emailing survivors if we have their email addresses, and we're going to announce it on our social media and may try to do some direct mailings. But mailing in certain places isn't really such a great option right now, including getting our own staff into offices. As like you, we are also in New York Claims Conference working from home. So mailings are not not the easiest to get accomplished at the moment. But if a survivor contacts you because they're used to receiving their life certificate around this time of year, you can certainly let them know that it's been postponed. Nothing got lost in the mail, but given the crisis that we're all dealing with, it's been postponed for the moment. Similarly to the announcement you received regarding a puppy came in, a dog wanted to join the meeting. So separately similarly to the announcement you received from us regarding the eligibility documents for social welfare, meaning that we will accept non-original signatures during this time if you can get it via another method, such as a picture or email. Similarly, in compensation, they're going to be accepting that just during...
Uh-oh. I think that that she froze. Is it just me, or did she freeze?
No, it's
everybody. She's frozen.
She's okay. Frozen, yeah.
I'll message her, Lisa. I'm in a chat. I'll send her a chat.
I was just about to.
While you guys are doing that, I actually have an update on the BEG life certificates, or at least some of them. This is Lisa Hoffman from Beit Tzedek in Los Angeles, and we have been working through the German State Department to try and address the most urgent ones of those. So the BEG life certificate that I believe is due this month is the one from the Munich office. And they responded to the consulate in Los Angeles that that they are giving extensions at least until June 1st on the BEG life certificate from Munich. But they do want people who need that extension to tell them that they need it. So they can do that by either, you know, just if they get an envelope to send the life certificate back in, they can send a note back through that way. Or they can send a message through the local, you know, the German consulate that has jurisdiction over their area. Or if they need to, if necessary, you know, you can also share that information with us and we can get the information to the consulate here so that they can pass it on. But they are giving extensions until June 1st. And then after June 1st, that office will reassess and decide if they need to give further extensions. And then the other offices, I think they're sort of waiting to see as their deadlines get closer what the situation is going to be. But I think we're pretty confident that there will be extensions if necessary.
Okay, good. Thank you for letting us know. And Julie has just come back.
I'm sorry, everyone. I'm so sorry. Now I'm on my phone. I think maybe the dog wanting to join the meeting pulled out the...
Okay.
Oh, Lisa, he's not excited to hear about life certificate.
Lisa, there is a question. Lisa Hoffman, there is a question from Leah. Can they do it without a notary?
Can they do the BEG life certificate without a notary?
I'm assuming yes.
I think the question is whether the social services agency can certify those. I'm not 100% sure, but I think so. I believe for BEG they can, if you are able to actually meet with the survivor, but they do still want somebody, they want them to meet face-to-face with somebody and get some kind of official certification. So that's why they're giving the extension for now for those that aren't able to do that.
I was going to say, is anyone on this call, just nod to me, is anyone on this call meeting with clients in person right now?
No.
That was my sense. None of us, we've all been mandated to do only telephonic support at this point, aside from food delivery and home care essential, right? Essential services. Okay. So that's just good for us to know. Lisa, I'm so glad you're here, Lisa Hoffman, because this is good info, but none of us are allowed or being mandated really to not see clients face-to-face and really to reduce contact with them aside from ensuring they have essential food and home care.
Yeah, and I just also would note that I think I know the claims conference had been looking into this a little bit too, but there are some states in which remote notarization is allowed. It's just a minority of states right now, but there are quite a few of them. And that would be basically where the person appears via like a video chat with the notary, and they sign the document on the video chat, and then the notary can notarize the document. But they don't allow that here in California, so I'm not very familiar with the remote notarization process. But it might be something worth just checking into if you have clients who especially want to try and do it. But I do think that we're going to be able to get extensions, so I wouldn't worry about that too much.
Thanks, Lisa.
I was going to say, I guess you might want to monitor the chat, Laura or Victoria, but I was just going to say if anyone had questions for Julie, she's been trying to come in and out. I think that she may be having some problems with her bandwidth. Write it in the chat so that I can send them to her in case she doesn't get back on, if anyone had any thoughts.
I'm on now,
that.
I'm back on.
Oh, good.
Yeah, sorry, I joined with my phone, but then I was able to reconnect. So I'm here with for any questions. Obviously, agency-specific ones we can talk after, but anything that generally applies, I will do my best.
I do have a question if I could ask Julie, and because it's also a question for everyone about home care. So I haven't thoroughly read every word of the notification yet, but I appreciate all the flexibility that you're negotiating, Julie. It really is a relief and reassuring. My question is about whether the 20% shift for other needs can also be from home care to other needs, because, and this is the question to everybody, one of the things we're hearing is that some of our clients are canceling caregivers because they're afraid of them coming, or they're moving back in with family for this time. So, you know, it's almost kind of contradictory to what we thought, which was the increased need for care. God forbid someone should get sick. But for the most part, we're also concerned about meeting our spending expectations and goals for home care.
Sure. So, thanks, Unid. Nice to see you. So the 20%, so for the most part, what we've been hearing globally is the personal care is continuing, but people are maybe giving up the housekeeping. We've certainly heard that a lot. So first of all, we don't want you to worry about underspending. These are challenging times, and we don't want you to worry. So the 20% for sure is a way around the cap for sorry to be technical for those that don't have these grants, but there's sort of a cap within grants, a maximum that can be spent for other supplemental services like food and medicine and medical and dental. So of course there could be room already in your cap. I assume people aren't going to the dentist and other things, but you might need above your current supplemental services cap. Yes, that 20% can be for increasing on the other if you're underspending in your home care. Did that answer it?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, so 20%. So it depends on your grant size. You don't lose what you already have in other, but it is a way to, especially if you're underspending in home care. Obviously, the budgets are what they are. We don't anticipate the German government will give us more money this year. I feel pretty confident saying they won't for 2020. So what that means, though, is obviously thinking ahead later in the year about when home care might resume, just in terms of your budget, because you will be spending a significant amount potentially of the other within April to June. And again, we can talk specifics about spending and budgeting with your program officer, but you could potentially be spending quite a bit in this short period of time in the second quarter for food. Food has been, I will say, pretty universally the thing that we're hearing the most, getting food to people and paying to get the food to people, like the delivery and other things. So that pretty universally around the world is what we're hearing is the food needs and the PPE and the medical supplies.
Laura Tarlin wants it.
Just a question, could we use the cap also with more case management, or is it just the other supplemental?
So there's a regular process, it just in terms of case management increases. So you can talk about that if you've increased, if you know, we've been trying to set, we had did that survey a little while ago, probably over a year now, but everyone answered it so honestly, everyone answered it differently, that it was hard to sort of share those results because it was terminology is different and how people do it. And actually agency expectations were so different. Some people have wildly different expectations about caseload. So we didn't actually release any sort of final results of that because it was hard to consolidate into one. So separately, there's a regular process you can talk to your program officer in terms of generally speaking, a case management increase. If it's just for this time, if you're hiring an additional person because you're seeing that you need to be calling people more often, if your social workers are working more hours to this program and it is only temporary, so you don't want to change your budget overall, yes, it can go into this 20%. And so once we have a better idea of how to direct you to do this within your budget, we can walk through with you what those changes might be and those budget lines might be for that 20%. But yes, that is an understandable use of time. The social workers may be calling people every day or more often to reassure, or you might be putting more people on the program. We understand, we've heard that also.
So Cindy, are you gonna, yeah, you'll ask that, Laura?
Yeah, I was gonna say Cindy in Clearwater asked, Julie, if we have additional admin to get staff set up to work effectively remotely, is that allowed?
Yeah, so there will probably be within that 20, again, I don't want to talk too technical because you might not be the Diamond, Diamond's our reporting system, but within Diamond, there are these different budget lines. So we're trying to, without having to do a massive redevelopment for this, what I hope will only be through June, I really hope for all of our sakes and our clients' sakes, that what we can do with existing functionality. So we will be creating budget lines, trying to repurpose so we don't have to do dramatic programming. And so we'll let you know what that is, but most likely for the most part, you will be budgeting with client names like usual, like for food, you'll tell us who's been getting the food packages. But if it's something like software, because you need to buy business Zoom accounts, yes, it can go under the 20%. And for that, you would not report with names because we know it's a technology issue. But that is a reasonable expense to set people up at home. We've also heard a lot about some virtual socialization and setting some people, some of the survivors up with that and your staff up with that to do programming. That is also something we're willing to consider to be checking on people, reduce, even further reduce the isolation people might be feeling right now.
Missy, I just wanted to tell you, I see your question, and we'll, as soon as we're done asking Julie questions, we can ask Lisa your question. It's a good one. Does anyone else have questions for Julie?
I just have one question, and I see Amy's trying to talk too, but I'll ask it quickly, which is, you talked about the sort of shifting within a quarter, for example, within this period of time. I think there may be a surge in later quarters of needs too, as we get back on track, for example, with home care and the issue that we just mentioned. Mm-hmm. So with regard to just the kind of 25% trying to spread things out pretty evenly across the year, will there be some flexibility with that too?
So for sure, you won't be able to do that, right? So for second quarter, we, especially with this 20% allowance, I think we all expect to see a rapid increase in spending for food during this time and whatever else, maybe some medicine that was hard to get or maybe is more expensive at this time. We're hearing a lot of the over-the-count, you know, vitamin D people are trying to get. So we will for sure, I think, expect you to be spending in those other categories in the second quarter. And we are, you know, we're dealing with this day to day too. So we'll be thinking about how and what we ask when you do finally report when it comes to these quarters. We'll probably have to adjust, you know, when we ask about your spending, I'm sure we'll understand that it was due to this time period. But for in terms of us, we only have approval for this flexibility through June at this moment. That was made very clear to us. So if we again, I'm gonna be optimistic and hope that it really is only through June and that we need it. But if it is looking longer, we'll have to go back to the German government. Obviously, we'll wanna go way before so that we can have an answer. But I'm hoping it won't be and that we won't have to do that. And that we understand this spending for certainly for some things will be higher during this quarter. But again, we have to think ahead in terms of if it's underspending in home care, that's okay, right? Or if it's because it's just packages for Passover or special one-time packages, but it may not be obviously sustainable because there are no additional funds at this point, separate from our urgent relief fund, which many of you have already applied for.
Julie, I'm not sure. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, from Houston. I just wanted to point out that our state cannot use the SNAP benefit on the grocery delivery or any resources. I know a lot of other states are having that difficulty. So even though we have to say if they have, you know, SNAP, it doesn't really apply now because they can't use it. You know, they're not able to get their groceries with it.
So, Leah, thank you. You're actually the first person who raised that. At least that got to me. So I appreciate that. So I would just, you know, obviously document it. Are they letting you, I don't know if you know, is that going to be a cumulative so they could use it later do they lose the monthly allowance?
We haven't been told yet in Texas how we're going to work it. We just are seeing it as a huge problem.
I just wanted to say, I this morning, it's so good that you bring that up. This morning, I had a call with our local JCRC, Jewish Community Relations Council. I also emailed the policy director at Mazon and said, this is a huge problem that people have SNAP, but they can't be in Kansas or Missouri. Mm-hmm. I think in most states, actually, because not California. I had asked, who did I ask? Victoria, did I ask you?
Our clients can't use it either, like to do like Instacart or Kroger or whatever.
This is a national problem. And so I emailed Mazon to say, is this something we can kick up? So I will keep the network posted, but I did kick that up to a bunch of different national and local places because it's such a big barrier. Not only that, we're hearing from clients who have WIC that they get to the store and there just isn't supply. The things that they're, you know, authorized to purchase with their WIC benefits, there's no supply in stock. So we know that that's a huge problem, Leah. It's a big one.
Thank you for raising it. Leah, I think that you're raising it because of our subsidiarity, our government requirement maybe. Is that, so obviously if you can't use it, you can't use this. This is a crisis time. And we know that if they can't access their food stamps SNAP, then they can't access their SNAP, and you're helping them buy food, whether it's on the grant or you apply for the emergency relief fund or on your emergency assistance grant if you have an emergency assistance grant. So we understand it's not available at this time.
Thank you.
It seems like the claims conference is doing so much for, you know, clearly the Holocaust survivors, but getting in extra money and trying to really be amenable to all the, you know, to what's going on in everyone's communities. I, as the person who is not in the field with all of you, it seems like the claims conference is really stepping up and doing a great job, Julie.
Thank you, Lisa. I mean, it has been heartbreaking for us. It's so important to hear from all of you, and we have been, and we appreciate it, and please letting us know the challenges. and also some positive. Sometimes we get some lovely pictures of Passover package deliveries, and we like seeing that too. But it is important for us to know what's going on and to the best of our ability. And we've been trying to respond as much as possible and as quickly as possible, which isn't always so easy for us to do. But we've worked really, really hard to do it. The entire team in social welfare is working to be responsive to you and try and find ways to adjust and adapt and help. We also, agencies can get additional advances to help with cash flow. If you haven't talked to if your program officer hasn't talked to you about it yet, please reach out to them, because we've been issuing pretty substantial advances when we can. And it's important for us to know, and then we can go and talk to the relevant people about making adjustments when we can. And we're hearing from around the world, and it's been really heartbreaking. And we just thank you who are working directly with the survivors and all of your vulnerable clients and making sure they're safe and secure. And it's just amazing work, and it's important work. And we're so thankful to everyone. And we are just trying to do what we can from the funding side in addressing the issues and concern as best as we can. We can't do everything, but we're trying to do as much as we can. Miriam, also, I want to say, Miriam, I think Weiner has joined, possibly. She's been working nonstop. Greg Schneider, our executive vice president, has been working nonstop. We're really, we work tirelessly for Holocaust survivors, and they are one of the most vulnerable populations in general. And during this time, it has been motivating and heartbreaking, and we just thank you so much for everything that you're all doing as well.
So thank you. I think that, I don't know, Laura or Victoria, if you want to segue into conversation about what's happening in our communities with our survivors, because I feel like that's important too, for us to be able to talk with each other about what's going on. And you know, that's something Laura really felt strongly about. So do you want to start it?
Yeah, sure.
Is that okay with you, Julie? Is that okay?
Of course.
Okay.
And if anyone has additional questions, you can type them in the chat. Thank you, Julie, so much for your time. And Lisa Hoffman, thank you for answering some questions on the side too. We appreciate it. You wanted to make time and space to talk about for us to be able to share kind of what we're experiencing, how we're getting critical services to our Holocaust survivors, some of the challenges, some of the opportunities. I don't know if we've gotten to a place where we have any opportunities just yet, but if you do, you can share them, because this is really our time together to talk through, you know, what's working and maybe what isn't. So we wanted to open up the floor to that. And I have some options for us, but I think it's most important that that we just listen and make sure that people have time to share.
So in order to share, you have to unmute yourself.
Hi, this is Callie. I just wanted to say that we've created a volunteer hub on our website so that people who are willing to volunteer can put in their information and tell us what they're able to do. And then we also have the opposite, where people who need help can put in the help that they need, whether it's shopping or it's just a friendly call. So we're trying to, and this is actually for the broader community, not just for survivors, for seniors, for people with disabilities who are living alone, just a way for us to really try to meet the needs of the community as a whole. And you know, the survivors, we've been fortunate over the last couple of years. Also, thank you to JFNA, because our grant that we initially got really set many survivors up with some individual connections with volunteers who are still helping out.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Is anyone doing anything in particular with technology? You know, I'm getting all of these CMS emails about telephonic, you know, telehealth, but really it's by telephone. And we know that our older adults and our Holocaust survivors are going to need eyes on them, not just yours. Is anyone doing anything with technology? Is anyone adapting Uniper to do anything differently with the technology now?
Victoria? So I can speak about that a little bit. We started the Uniper Life at Home program about a year and a half ago. So we do have staff who is doing programming and checking in with clients almost on a daily basis. And then they're having that kind of face-to-face interactions where they're able to get some exercise in and just talk. So we're really trying to rev up using Uniper as a way of to communicate with our clients. And then I just wanted to share something. I think I might have shared it with Lisa already. Our staff has become completely mobile. And one of the things we do now in the mornings is that for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, we'll do a virtual meeting with everybody when we call it coffee time. And so everybody has, you know, our team of like 5 people, we have room and to just communicate with each other and kind of assess each other and support each other. So, you know, we're not isolated and like we're together with others, which has been really wonderful.
Is anyone else doing things like that? Oh, Missy, yeah.
No, it has not. I wasn't going to talk about technology. I was going to give a food update if pertained to anyone, but we can wait for that if you'd like.
Well, I was just wondering if anyone was doing technology or if they're doing those kinds of daily check-ins with their, you know, colleagues.
I can just add, it's Yonit. We were on the edge of launching Uniper, as probably Lisa knows, through NJHSA, and we all wish we had it already. But we are working with Uniper still to try to implement it and with a broader reach at this point, because this was really for the most socially isolated and homebound survivors, and now everybody is socially isolated and homebound, including us. But they've been giving us some other alternatives to connect to Uniper. So they're still doing installations, even though they're wearing protective gear and that could be triggering. So there's issues about that. They're offering self-installation, so they actually can send the hardware that's needed and instructions if a survivor has somebody who can help them to do that. And then they're also offering web-based connection to Uniper too at a different fee structure, which they haven't quite figured out yet, less, because it doesn't require an installation. But if people already have some sort of web-based device, then they can also connect to the content. So we're working hard to gather lists of survivors who could use one of those three options of connecting through Uniper. And just to the point about connecting with our team, yes, we're doing that very regularly. We're having Zoomer vision, supervision, you know, all the time, including team meetings with the 20 of us who work with survivors. We're doing not only those kind of check-ins, but like a resilience roster so that we can kind of check in and hear about the stories of inspiration and the comments that our survivors are making to us. About how they made it through and how they can give us. And, you know, we always give them an opportunity to help others because that's empowering, and it's a mitzvah to let them help do a mitzvah as well. I must say, though, and maybe this will come up later in this group, that we had our first deaths related to coronavirus in our survivor community, and that hit hard. I mean, we all deal with loss with our survivors. We lost, I think, over 50 survivors last year, but this one really was a blow. It was a couple who died within hours of each other. Both were our clients. So it made the news as well, because that was kind of a unique situation, at least right now for Chicago. And so we've been dealing with that, and we're moving on. And we, you know, unfortunately it wasn't unexpected, or, you know, hopefully there won't be a lot more, but there may. But it's just something that I, you know, wanted to share that we're certainly grappling with.
Yeah, that's something that Laura and I, before this call, were also talking about, that when it hits, you know, the community that you're working with, it's really hard and painful and scary, because who knows what could happen in the future and who else may, you know, succumb. But do other people have ideas or thoughts? I love that resilience roster. What a great idea. Maybe you can write some of those stories down and we can post it somewhere on our website, because we all need to hear those kinds of stories. And I'm sure all of you have those in your work.
Lisa, sorry.
Go ahead, go ahead.
It's Tatiana from Edmonton, Canada. Just to build in on the question regarding technology, so maybe it's a question for Julie. Can the additional funds being spent for purchasing cell phones or tablets for survivors to be able to communicate?
So do you mean the 20% or applying to the urgent relief fund?
Urgent relief fund.
So we've gotten some requests. We're still going through it. I mean, it would be probably trying to promote programming. If you're going to be doing programming and virtual socialization, I would recommend phrasing it that way. Mm-hmm. And also we might come back to you and ask about, you know, the sustainability, but it's not a no, but because we have gotten similar things that we're seeing. We're still going through them, but usually they're with also the ideas about how it will be used to reduce isolation. Rather than just a tech purchase.
Totally. Okay, understandable. Okay, thank you, Julie.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I mean, I can talk about Missy from Detroit. So we had, in the past, we had funds through JF&A to provide iPads to, you know, decrease the social isolation with the the volunteer taught them and all that kind of stuff. So we are looking at you. So right now, some of the volunteers are still connecting with their people over, obviously, the iPad, and some are using their phone. So they're able to FaceTime or check in or send an email, and looking at ways that we can also have some of our staff who are working with some of those clients that have those tablets to be able to do that virtually with them, check in. We're checking in with our clients very often, obviously all of our clients, but especially the survivors. And so we're using the technology in that way and looking at ways that we can do more of the classes and stuff like that, but it's hard. So if we order iPads, if they even come in to give to the survivors in their homes, how are we getting them set up? How are we teaching them to use it? So that's where we see the ones that have it and have had that training, it's great, but expanding it right now is really problem-solving. It's really tricky right now. So we're, any ideas that anyone else is using, we are happy to try and implement because we want that.
This is Callie. This morning I asked when we had our Zoom staff meeting, which we've been doing every day, and then after that, as the Holocaust team was being on the phone with each other just to make sure that we're on the same page and we're communicating the needs of everybody. But I asked whether we couldn't go to our community leaders and see if they can do a drive for older smartphones or iPads or tablets or something that could be donated. And then if we can get those in, you know, for many survivors, though, they don't have the internet access. So it would be something that we'd have to look to see. Maybe they're donors who will, you know, pay for it for a month or two, for a couple of months for somebody, and we can see if we can't get them connected. Not necessarily only just purchasing the technology, but we have to make sure that it will work for them, but we're looking to see if we can't mobilize that way.
Yeah, I know that the face-to-face is really what all, you know, these survivors need, but I know we've had an increase in our volunteer, you know, people all over wanting to volunteer, and since we can't do the face-to-face, we're having a lot more requests for the check-in calls, and those are really helpful. So our staff is, you know, on the front lines doing all this stuff or from their homes and doing all the calls and all the other emergency stuff. It's really helpful for a volunteer to be also offering that extra kind of call and visit. So I know they're appreciating that. I don't know if that'll help in your community.
Mm-hmm. We've done the same in Kansas City. We instituted like pretty early on a welfare check-in that we do across programs. So we're asking about having adequate food, having access to prescriptions for 30 days and 90 days. We're asking hard questions that, you know, so we're keeping tabs on domestic violence shelters. We know that rates of domestic abuse go up when there are tragedies and difficult times. We're also asking about internet access and access to actual hardware, because we asked in our CARE, so we had a good amount of data actually in our system in our CARE Act grant, which we submitted yesterday. I don't even know what day it is. Maybe we submitted it Tuesday. I can't remember, but we actually made an ask for technology for older adults, because my concern is like, you know how much you see and smell like when you're in someone's home, and we just like do not get that on the phone. I am like super concerned about eyes and noses on our survivors and not just ears. So we put in money actually to hire someone who's been a volunteer for us. We would have to, you know, gown him up and get him into people's homes so that they do have the technology if we are having to shelter in place a little bit longer term than we wanted. And I'm happy to share any of that touch point information. We're, you know, assessing risk by domain basically so that we can get aggregate information and then also individual information on our clients.
Well, how would you have him go in a hazmat suit?
I don't know if we would have him gown up. Lisa, it's like, I don't even know what the recommendations are. Most like 95% of our older adults that we serve, of the 800 older adults that we serve at JFS, do not have access to technology. And it's, I think, a really critical time for them to have access. So I don't know what would be safe, but, and we're also doing, like Missy mentioned, we're also doing check-in. We're using that touch point, that welfare check-in with volunteers, so they can also check in with clients and also, you know, provide supportive listening to them on the phone. I hope that'll be meaningful.
So Laura brought up something important. I don't know if other people, what they're doing, if they are getting eyes on their clients, if they figured out a way to do that.
It's Rebecca from Stamford, Connecticut. Hi, guys. Hi, Lisa. And I'm joined by our program director for our Holocaust Survivor Program, Marina Sapir. And one of the problems we're having I was really excited to bring up to the group, but I'm really happy and thankful for the group today, is that we are organizing our pantry, our Passover program, and trying to make sure people are getting meals in the homes. We have a home meal delivery program, and thanks to very many thanks. Just have to throw a shout out to Blue Card Fund. Thank you, Blue Card Fund, so much. We're getting a lot of meals out to our Holocaust survivors in their home. And the problem we're experiencing is that many of the survivors are getting to the point where they don't want, they won't even come out of their apartment to come. And Marina, please jump in I want to make sure I'm saying this correctly. They won't even come out of their apartment to walk down to the front of the building, because we're doing no contact delivery at the front of the building. And one at a time, so that no one's even coming at the same time. But they won't even come out of their apartment at all. And we are struggling right now to figure out, how do we get this food to these people? And our numbers are dropping in people willing to get our delivery on Sunday because they won't step outside of their apartment. What do you guys think?
I mean, if someone else has something to say, feel free to stop me and check in. It's Missy again. So I also oversee our meals program, our Kosher Meals on Wheels program. And so we've been doing deliveries and partially funded by Title III through the Older Americans Act and all that. So there has been some exceptions made, so we can now leave the food out. I actually just got a request today saying that the person cannot actually come to the front of the building. So it's volunteer driven, except now since they're dropping out, but we might make an exception for some. So if they are using the protective gear, some of them will go into the apartment building, not using an elevator is recommended, and dropping the food at their door specifically, not outside the building. So
when you say protective gear, are you talking about gloves and masks, or are you talking about hazmat suits?
A suit was discussed earlier, but you know, we don't have access to a lot of that stuff because people don't have enough. So it's the mask is if they want it, or it's up to the volunteer if they're willing to do it. We obviously, you know, are just asking if the volunteer will do that. So Yeah, it's the only way we can get them access to food. One of the people can't even get out because of her disability. So,
and Missy, I have a question for you, which is, what are you doing in cases where the building managers are saying no entry is allowed at this time? And then, and you have the survivor who won't let you, they won't come out.
So we've been lucky enough where we've been talking. So we're actually dealing with this with a nursing home right now because we cannot enter at all. So we'll make arrangements with the administrator for them to come out and get it. So they still, if they don't let us in the building, that means one of their staff is there. So we'll arrange it with them to come out and get it.
Okay. Thank you.
Because all the guidelines have been loosened during this time. So you don't have to have that, I guess, opening the door and seeing the client. I mean, we're waiting in the car and watching them and calling them because we want that face to face. But now everyone's considered homebound where they weren't before. And so our program actually has expanded tremendously. So that's been a big challenge that we're working with right now. I mean, we have tons and tons of callers now, let alone we advertised it and all that. But yeah, so.
We've had struggles with the buildings too, and we have many survivors in high-rise subsidized housing, some of which have broken elevators. And so even going downstairs to go to the lobby to pick up a food delivery, they're scared to do that because they're in close contact. There doesn't seem to be a lot of organization about like letting people go one by one in an elevator, or there ends up being a line. And that, of course, is, you know, triggering and not social distancing as well. So it's been an issue, which is one of the reasons we've been actually trying to source and push for sending some sort of protective face masks, not N95s, but something to at least ease anxiety. And also provide some added measure protection. It hasn't been easy to source that. We don't certainly want to divert from healthcare professionals, but we feel like this is something that is moving very quickly with the CDC. And we're trying to be kind of ahead of the curve. I should say that sometimes that's not always in agreement with our leadership of our agency. So I don't know if any of you have had sort of struggles with being at a different pace with people who need to make some of those decisions. But it's another, I think, reason to get people to have at least some gloves and masks so that they can feel at least they can go and get the essential medications or groceries that they need downstairs. Or some even asked because they wanted to go out to the garden area and have some fresh air,
right,
and didn't feel safe to do that.
Has anyone identified, I see that Jen in Albuquerque asked a question about getting people like essentials, disinfectant and wipes. So we are also doing a lot of phone consultation with clients to help educate them about how to, you know, if they have an Instacart delivery, how to clean things and make sure that they're safe. Has anyone found a good funding source for that? Or access to the supplies? Because I know they're in shortage.
This isn't answering directly what you just said, but Milana had reached out to me privately in lieu of my question. But yeah, it's a real struggle here. I mean, even just for basic essentials for all of our clients, but I'm, you know, mostly focused on the survivors, and everybody seems to be okay right now, but it's scary for them and for everyone.
Thanks. I like made a run to Friday the 13th. It was Friday the 13th. I went to our income-based housing unit, and I had a paramedic intern with me, and I made him schlep. We went from like apartment to apartment. I had little hand sanitizers. I like distributed them to all of my clients. I mean, I literally, and I don't know why, I just was like, I just need to go. And I'm so glad I did, but it's true. We can't find, we had to buy at Target.
Right. That was 2 weeks ago.
And fill from the pumps. I know it was like a totally different world, but I just like, they were like, what are you doing? I brought chips and like non-perishables just in like the most haphazard way. But I just had a feeling that I needed to like make sure they had food. But I, you know, we're having the same challenge. You'll need something. So, one of our board members likes to sew, and she and friends, and I think a synagogue group are sewing masks. And I can let you know once we get more information. They've just started, and we're going to put them in our pantry deliveries so that all of our pantry clients have them. And then we're also going to be, hopefully, you know, if we can have enough, distributing them to volunteers, staff, you know, so that people have an option.
So I was going to say that I think it's, you know,
it's mandatory in a way, if that's what you feel is important and you want to protect not only the volunteers, but to protect the clients, that, you know, you just wear a mask when you're inside delivering the food or doing whatever it is you're doing. It doesn't seem like it should be that much of a stretch, because everyone knows the danger of, you know, being asymptomatic and being close to, you know, seniors, and you don't know if you have it or not. And it's really to protect, right? It's really to protect.
Yeah, it's the other way around, though. Like, I think that message has, at least in our community, been pretty clear about, if you're the one who's delivering something or the caregiver in the home, the caregiving agencies are providing some PPE, for example, but those who don't go through agencies, who are private caregivers, may not. They may see more than one client, so our clients want to have it for themselves so that they have some sense of protection when they have to go and get that delivery from their right. lobby, and they want to be able to give it to whoever does, like caregivers who are still, or even family members who are coming in and bringing them something. So it's both the anxiety and some sense of protection, I think.
Right. Well, I think that what Laura said, if there's a congregation that would do that, make some sort of masks for your, you know, CJE, maybe you make a request, because I think people want to help out. And if there's a need, especially people who are sewing and they're at home, it's easy to make these masks if you sew.
Lisa, do we have a template? Do you have a template?
I have a template. Yeah, I have a template I could send people.
Yeah, if you could share your resources on these kinds of masks, gloves, sanitizer kind of thing, that would be helpful. You know, we have 1,700 survivors, so part of it is just quantity. So it's having the bandwidth to even organize something like that, and then figure out delivery. So we're looking right now into sort of bulk purchases and then maybe doing a big mailing to everybody. We want to message some other things to them right now as well. And those are lightweight and easy to put into an envelope, at least to have some sort of small supply. But, you know, we're open to anything. It's just having the bandwidth to put the system in place too.
Okay.
And Adam just shared that they're working with a AAA. And so if you go in the chat, he shared some insights what can be helpful.
Great.
I'd also suggest if you're in need of certain supplies, we decided that we big thing was people were worried about toilet paper and paper towel right now, and so we're like, well, we can't get it in bulk. What do we do? And someone put it out in their like neighborhood, kind of they have like a neighborhood chat or something, and a vendor you know raised his hand and said, what do you need? Let us know, and now we're going to distribute. Packs to every single Meals client, as well as we'll have it now in bags for our other clients who need it, that we'll start delivering, and we'll use our transportation to do that. Mm-hmm. But we literally put it out there and then are getting it the next day. So I know we got lucky in that sense. I totally get that. But we're just seeing, you know, there's some places that we didn't know to reach out to.
Right. Jenny, yeah.
Lisa, we were on a call recently, there have been so many, I don't remember which one. But one of them was talking about, even if we can't get, someone said, even if we can't get disinfectant kind of wipes or Clorox or those types of things, that they, in their meals once a week or at Passover, for example, were putting just regular soap.
That's right.
In the basket, just again to kind of encourage people to keep washing their hands, and it's just a reminder, and it's really part of a care package in a way that we might not otherwise have thought about.
Right, Jenny, as I remember, it wasn't just soap, but they also put in instructions as to, you know, what to do when you get food. Like someone was asking that, you know, how you wipe it off or wash your hands or et cetera, just as a reminder. And I think we have that flyer or that information in our resource center. I'll look for that and let you guys know at the end of this.
I just wanted to give a shout out also to the Blue Card. I know you guys are working really hard and just been, we know New York City is really a difficult place right now, and just wanted to say thanks for being so proactive and reaching out and offering support. And I wanted also to offer support to every single one of you on this call, because I know this is just, we're really wading through the most unimaginable times, and it's like heartbreaking to hear we're all hearing it. My survivors say, when can you come and visit? And I'm like, oh my God, I would come and, well, how's my baby? They all ask me, how's my baby? We have a 1-year-old, a 13-month-old. And it's just like heartbreaking to feel the distance. But, you know, we're together. We're all in this together. And we're going to share best practices together and support each other and just give yourselves a pat on the back and make sure to take care of yourself and eat and drink. And, you know, we'll keep having these calls and we're here even offline. If we're not on one of these calls, we're here and happy to answer questions and share together.
Yes. I know it's the time that we're supposed to be ending at 3:30 and you just gave a shout out to Milana. Milana, I don't know if you just wanted to say something quickly before the end of this, because I don't know, you just might want to. Or not. Do I have to unmute you? No. Okay. Well, anyway, thank you all for being on this call. I will send out
templates. Lisa?
Yes.
I'm Milana. I just got on.
Okay, great. Did you want to say anything to all of us before we end?
Hi, Lisa. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, sorry. I've been having a lot of technical difficulties working from home, but I just want to say thank you. Thank you to Rebecca and Laura for the shout out, and thank you to everybody. I know this is such an incredibly difficult time, and, you know, we're all in this together, like Laura said, and, you know, if there's anything at all that the Blue Card can do or continue to do, just please let us know and be in touch directly with me. I'll put my email address here on the chat, so feel free to reach out at any time. And thank you all so much for everything.
Okay, great. And Seema says, thank you, Milana, for your support to us as well.
Of course, so, thank you.
So I'll get all that information to you today. I hope everyone, you know, has a happy Seder, a virtual Seder. I don't know what people are doing. I know this is going to be a trying time for all of us. And, you know, hopefully we will find positive things that have come out of this, because, you know, we can't just have all negativity. And part of what I have found, I don't know why I'm saying this now, but part of what I have found is that going through this crisis has really brought the network and all of the staff in the network together in such a meaningful and supportive way. To me, that's a real blessing. And I hope that it's been good for you all as well. So that's really it. Happy Passover. Thank you, Victoria. Thank you, Laura. And thank you, everyone.
Thank you, Lisa.
Okay. If you need me, you know where to reach me. Okay. Bye, everyone.
Hey, everybody. Nice to see you.